We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 495. Today's show is brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. It's over with. The 2020 season is done. Good riddance to that piece of shit baseball season, Scott. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a really long time ago. We're recording this on Monday. It ended, what, last... When did it end? On
Tuesday, right?
Tuesday. It feels like a lot longer than that. But yeah, it's over. That's fine. Like, it was a very strange season. It ended in probably the most appropriate way possible.
I'd say, with Justin Turner
coming back and saying, F you to everybody, F you to anybody around me. I don't know all the details, but gets popped for COVID in the... They tell him in the middle of the game.
That's so bizarre.
Like, the whole thing is strange.
There's something that doesn't line up there.
I don't know what it is. I don't know why it would... I don't know who it would benefit to wait or not wait. I don't know. And then pull him out. If you did wait, why would you pull him in the middle of the game? Did someone find out that they waited and then it was like, no, and it's like running with a piece of paper like to Texas, like, I have the results. Like, I don't know. I'm imagining almost, like, this whole behind the scenes thing happening.
It's almost like that's what it seemed like. Get
Turner out of the game. It's like someone that's a Tampa fan. Like the freeze is like sprinting to Arlington with the results of Justin Turner's COVID test.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a dramatic movie about it in 20 years. But but it's almost like the Dodgers were just ignoring the results until they realized that, yeah, we're gonna win the World Series, so I guess we can take them out of the game now and do the right thing, quote unquote. But yeah, very, very bizarre ending. So I think pretty typical ending for baseball this year, right? With how the entire season is gone. The entire year is gone for Major League Baseball. Started with a cheating scandal, ends with a COVID scandal. Yeah, sure. Let's tie a bow on it.
Yeah. I mean, it had to. I feel like it had to come back full circle at some point because the season went pretty well for the most part.
Did it?
There were some...
Not every team played the same amount of games.
That's true.
Did it go well?
But they... I mean, from our expectations, yeah, I'd say it did. I'd say it did. They finished it for the most part. Were the Cardinals the only team that didn't get it in? Did the Marlins get all of theirs in? So the Cardinals were the only ones, and it didn't really affect much. So, yeah, I mean, look, I still think that MLB ended up at the end of the day. They did a good job figuring this out and getting it done. But yes, it's very appropriate. And the way that it ended, it was completely masked with a guy coming back on the field with COVID in pictures.
Yeah, I think back to the beginning of COVID when the league shut down, and basically from the day they shut down, it's just, I have a negative taste in my mouth because, like, the first thing that we focused on wasn't how are we going to get back on the field? Well, how are they going to overcome COVID? What are they going to do? It was just owners and players fighting with one another about money. And even though it was a COVID related shutdown, it felt like a work stoppage due to salary issues.
Well, I think it dragged on so long too, and there was just
dragged
so much
on so long
jockeying in the media.
And that was really like when you actually got down to what they were arguing about, it wasn't what is the safest way to perform this season. It was how much money are we going to get? How much money are you going to get?
Right.
And so that sort of just left a bad taste in my mouth, and nothing ever felt right about this season. And I guess you could say that about every sport. Because the NBA, NHL, they had to do bubble playoffs delayed after their normal playoffs. So that for diehard hockey and basketball fans, I'm sure that doesn't feel right. And football is still chugging along on its normal schedule. But no, some teams, you know, Jerry Jones had 40,000 people at the Dallas Stadium. Meanwhile, teams in the north don't have anybody in their stands. So that's kind of out of whack. So I get it. Everything's weird. We're a baseball podcast, so that's what I'm focused on. It's just, I'm kind of just happy this season's over with. I want to move on. And not that I think 2021's going to be magically everything erased and start a clean slate, but...
Well, that's kind of the underlying issue that we don't know about yet, and I think it's going to affect everything that we do this offseason and how MLB is going to approach it. It's everything that's in the news right now about baseball, you're seeing guys' offers are getting declined. You're seeing the amount of debt that Manfred's talking about and how if baseball were to have...
What did you think about him talking about that, sort of making a point to mention that on the eve of Game 6? Like, before this World Series even ends. Oh, by the way, we're in a record amount of debt, just so you know, FYI, there might be some money issues going forward. So when guys don't get paid in free agency, remember this conversation.
Don't be right now. It didn't come out of nowhere. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was trying to capture national attention while it was still there. Be able to talk to. I don't know what the motivation is there, but I mean it's a real thing. It's a very real thing in the sense that it's going to affect, I think, how people spend. It is. they were talking about this before we did our GM plans. Not that I still think that. Both of what we said is actually realistic. I do think the Yankees are going to spend some money. I personally do. But I think that there's a lot of teams that are really not going to, and it's going to affect a large sum of free agents. I think there's an opportunity for some teams, a couple teams here, to identify what they need and spend some money more than the others. So I think...
Is this a situation where like the rich get richer?
Yeah, because I do.
The Yankees can, even though Steinbrenner talked about they were maybe hit harder than any team in baseball, like let's not be foolish. They're not struggling for cash.
But I think that is a real thing. Like exactly what you said. The rich can get richer at this point. If you're in an opportunity right now to identify and understand that next year is going to be rough, potentially even the year after that is going to be rough. But you have enough in the bank and you have enough, you know, set aside for a rainy day that you can absorb that for a solid amount of time and still put a very good product on the field and go out and spend some money. I think if you're in that position, there have been a lot of very talented guys that were cut loose of options and contracts this past week. Somebody can go out there and spend a little bit more money and actually bolster their entire roster pretty significantly, I'd say.
We approached our free agency episode kind of like business as usual, because I think it would be impossible for you and I to project how much of an impact there's going to be. And that wasn't the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise was to how do we make the Yankees better next year?
Right.
It wasn't like trying to figure out, oh, free agents are going to get X percentage less because of all this. Like, there's no way you and I could ever come up with a realistic figure on that.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, like, I still think even if the numbers are down to where we, you know, think they may be or would have been if this were a normal offseason. I don't think that they're going to change their approach in the sense that they try to improve the team. I still think they're going to do that. And I think that if they're able to go out there and there's a competitive market for a guy like Trevor Bauer, just using him as an example, I still think the Yankees are going to be involved in that market.
Wouldn't you say if the market's down and then they don't go after guys like Trevor Bauer or Michael Brantley or DJ LeMahieu or name your top free agent, isn't that even more of an indictment?
Possibly.
Because they have an opportunity to get a guy that might ordinarily cost $150 million for $115 million or something like that, $130 million. Like you get a little bit of a percent off because of all this, and you're the New York Yankees and you're not going to do that?
That's the thing. I think there's an opportunity for the New York Yankees specifically to go out there and make some moves right now to fill these holes. I really
look. What happened in 2008-2009? Did the financial crisis hurt the Yankees spending in that offseason? No, they spent $500 million on Sabathia and Teixeira and AJ Burnett.
That's what happens with a lot of people. When the market's down, you see people gobbling things up at the bottom, as close to the bottom as they possibly can. And I think there's an opportunity for that. These are short-term assets. Everybody that's available is a short-term asset, unless you get a guy like Trevor Bauer to sign something longer. That'll be hard-pressed, I think, to do. But short-term assets,
even better.
You spend.
If you're doing that, even better, right? Yeah. Because that limits your long-term risk,
sure,
which we saw the Yankees get into trouble with because of that 2008-2009
spending. Or if you can get him to sign a longer-term contract that's a bargain, I just think it's going to be difficult to do that with guys like him. But you can certainly approach it. It depends what the market's going to dictate, really. The other thing is, we might see guys unsigned very late in the offseason again. That's probably what's going to happen.
Because teams are going to be like, well, we don't even know if the season's going to start on time. So we don't want to lock ourselves into a contract that we might not even be getting the full amount. We might not even be getting his full playing time for. And we don't want to have to lock ourselves into dealing with, oh, percentage of salary, like all that. Let's just see where the dust settles and then sign guys is how teams might approach it.
Yeah. Or if someone starts the charge and then, you know, guys start going, then somebody could start a run, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, we all talked, 2 years ago with the owners in collusion and them all working together against Harper and Machado and those guys. Well, if you don't think the owners are talking now, then I got a bridge to sell you, because I guarantee there are conversations happening of like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. And there's an underlying banding together of some, you know, strategy of either spending or not early or late. I wouldn't be
surprised. It's not just that. There's a new CBA after 2021. So this is all, that's all an underlying plot to all of this, is how's each side going to try and set themselves up to win on the CBA?
Well, yeah.
That's what we got a precursor to.
Oh, for sure. This whole thing was jockeying for that. We know that. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not looking good for the players at all.
Well, no, this definitely hurts the player. The COVID hurts the revenue losses. What did Manfred say? $8.3 billion.
A lot of totals. It was in the billions, yes. So
yeah, $8.3 billion for MLB 2020 total debt. Whether you buy that figure or not, whether you know whatever revenue loss you want to attribute to each team, that all spells bad news for the players. I think it's going to be telling on some of these guys so six players received the qualifying offer, which was 18.9 million, right? Yeah, 18.9 million. LeMahieu, Bauer, Springer, Realmuto, Stroman, and Gausman all got the qualifying offer. Like, if we see some of those guys take the qualifying offer, that could be an indication of how agents think the market's going to play out.
Yep, for sure. When are the deadlines for those qualifying offers? Do we know when the deadline is? That'll be a line in the sand, probably, of like when you're...
I'm gonna pull up the article now that I saw.
You also have a lot of these guys that are either overpriced or just a name and haven't delivered to, you know, what their name was supposed to be.
Ten days.
So
they have 10 days.
We'll know soon enough. That's going to be really difficult for a player to identify that there's going to be all of these things happening and not accept that qualifying offer with this much time ahead of you. So
the risk, though,
it's really pushing them to a limit.
The risk for some of those players is that then they are going to be free agents again when there could be potentially no CBA.
Right.
Because the CBA expires December of next year. So they could be free agents and there could be not even a deal in place between the two sides. And then that leaves them where they? They just shit out of luck? Like,
so they don't,
do you want
so
to be that player?
So that means they don't sign the qualifying offer this year for that 1 year guarantee, but you go out and you take a deal that's maybe under market or what you think should be market to get that long-term extension to get you through the CBA.
Yeah.
It really depends where you are in your career, probably. Are you 30 years old? Are you 28 years old? Is this a prime contract? Is this your last contract?
So all the guys that received the qualifying offer are all on the older free agent side. Like, LeMahieu's 32, Bauer's what, 30?
31, 30, yeah, somewhere in there.
So if you were, say Bryce Harper was a free agent again when he was 27 years old, he takes the qualifying offer.
Springer's not 30 yet, is he? He got to
look that up.
Yeah.
If you're like a 27-year-old free agent right now, you might take that qualifying offer and then bank on yourself. But if you're 32, do you really want to go enter free agency again at 33 when there could potentially be no CBA? You might just take a smaller AAV deal just to get it done and not worry about it. So we could be looking at a situation where LeMahieu signs back for 3 years instead of 4 years.
Damn,
or
Springer's
even
31.
Yeah, all those guys are kind of on the wrong half of 30.
Yeah, and those contracts don't extend. You're seeing a younger man's game, for sure. Like, you're seeing these guys get signed. Some of the older guys get, you know, thrown into the wind for some of the middle talent. Like, these teams don't want to bet on the back half of your career anymore. They just don't.
Well, unless the few rare exceptions, like Gerrit Cole.
I mean, mostly position players.
You have no choice but to just sign Gerrit Cole for 9 years because that's the market.
Yeah, but you're not paying. Yeah, exactly. But more, I'm talking about more position players. They're in a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. So before we get into some of the stuff, the Yankees, some Yankees news. What are your thoughts on how the World Series ended? Did you?
I predicted.
Do you appreciate that ending? The nerds wore some egg on their face to end the season. You appreciate that?
Absolutely, I appreciated that. I absolutely appreciate it. I appreciate the amount of people that are now speaking up saying that, hey, analytics, guys, maybe it doesn't work as well as we thought it did.
Or
maybe so, we're relying on it too much and it's not what the nerds are pitching it as. Maybe it's just a supportive supplemental piece of information that we should use to, you know, evaluate players after we evaluate what their talent looks like with our eyeballs. You know, something that I've been saying for years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah, that is one thing. And I think if that's the main takeaway, that's a positive thing, because you can't have 100% eye tests. You can't have 100% nerd tests. It just doesn't work. You have to have a blending. But also maybe a takeaway that I think some people are realizing, and some people that would not have admitted this maybe a year ago, maybe nerd baseball is not fun to watch.
Right.
Maybe that's not the most entertaining product, because I don't want to go into a game knowing no matter what, Blake Snell's getting pulled after two times through the order. He could have a perfect game. He could have 19 strikeouts. He could have, or 18 strikeouts, because that would be two times through the order. He could be pitching the game of his life, which he was, and he was still pulled. So where is the
for a
where,
guy that has where's struggled the surprise? That for a guy that has struggled mightily in the postseason ever since the Yankee series, really, and was went in there because of his name and what he did during the regular season. Like, Anderson was not pitching well at all.
No.
He had given up runs his last, I think, five or six appearances.
No, it was a run in his last three appearances.
It was more than that. Like, he was even worse than that. He had not been good, bottom line.
I think it was like 6 out of 7.
Yeah, okay. So he had not been good. And you have a guy rolling with good matchups.
A former Cy Young winner.
With good matchups. Two guys that he struck out twice already.
So it's just not fun. Like, you watch sports to see things that you don't expect. And if I'm just expecting Blake Snell to get pulled two times through the order, like, you know what? That's just not that much fun. That's going in there with a carbon copy, a template, is just not fun. That's not entertaining. That's not the goal of sporting events.
It also just doesn't work very well either.
It works in the regular season.
For the crunch time.
You're going to over 162 games. You know, you'll probably be right more than you're wrong on the two times through the order thing. But then there's going to be a situation in Game 6 of the World Series with your season on the line and Blake Snell pitching the game of his life.
Nutting up, big time. Yeah, just and a guy that's owning
the
moment.
Let him get his.
The guy is sitting out there, like, just absolutely dealing. Yeah, it was fitting. I'm glad it happened, to be honest. Because
if the Rays were going to lose, that's how they should have lost. That's
Kevin Cash
justice.
Was smarter than everybody else. He had a lot of the similar... you know, smugness that Madden had for a little while. Until Madden's more of a character, but I think Cash has that, like, very clear smugness towards a lot of other people. He was definitely the smarter guy in the room for a lot. He wasn't wrong either. And he owned the Yankees this year. So there's not much a Yankees fan can say, but I'm glad it happened. I'm glad it ended up not working for you at the end of the day. Because guess what? If you leave him, Snell in, I know there's no definitives, but you're probably winning that game.
But it's only a 1-0 lead for the Rays, and who knows? He could give up a solo home run to somebody in that inning.
That's why they pulled him.
I know. And then what would the nerds be saying? Well, two times through the order. You have to pull him after two times through the order.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a kind of a lose-lose situation for Kevin Cash.
It's not a lose-lose situation.
Because his bosses, Kevin Cash's
internally, maybe, yeah.
His bosses internally thinks he made the right move, right?
Yeah, for sure. Because the number
to this
said
day,
do this
move. I bet after the game they still say right move.
Oh, for sure. I guarantee they do.
So if he went
just like the Yankees were defending the J-Hap, David Garcia.
Doesn't matter what happens on the field. You might as well just not watch the game. But, like, what's the point? They're not watching. They're playing by a computer. It's a computer program. It's an Excel spreadsheet. That's how they are managing baseball. So, doesn't matter what happens on the field. The numbers tell me this is more likely to happen, so I'm going to bet on that.
So we were talking in the Facebook group, and Sierra, who posts in there quite a bit, she was talking about the fact that, like, it's easy to look at this and say, well, it didn't work, but you can still go and say that it was maybe the right move. And I'm on the side for this particular one. I was like, no, it didn't work. And no, it was not the right move 100% the entire time. I think there are opportunities and times that happens. You know, we've talked about this where a guy goes out there, makes the right move. We talked about the Chad Green and Tanaka scenario where Tanaka gets pulled for a guy like Chad Green. Tanaka has a history of all, there, it was a different scenario. Tanaka goes out. Chad Green gives up the home run. You could argue that that was the right move and it didn't work out. But in this particular case, I believe that it was the wrong move and it didn't work out. So I don't actually think that's the case here. But people are making that argument.
Right. It's not black and white. Like, you can't, you have to look at the game situations and you have to take into account external factors. Masahiro Tanaka is no longer anything more than a five inning pitcher.
Right.
That's just the stage of his career.
And to be fair, it was a one run game, and Blake Snell absolutely could have let a pitch slip and it could have left the park very easily, very easily. And actually, now you have like a tie game.
Yeah, especially in today's baseball where that's the only way you score is solo home runs. That's a very likely possibility.
Right. Or it's also possible that he shoves the bats down their throats and continuously does that because his pitch count was in a really good place.
Wouldn't you have liked to at least see him try?
Hell yeah. If that's my team, I definitely would.
Like, if,
I don't want to, because now it's unknown. It's just like, well, shit. I don't know. He could have. He was going that well.
Yeah, I'm
the
trying
argument
to think
takes
of a scenario.
You to the point of that he's a dominant guy and that they would have won. That's where the feeling takes you.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, like, because if it's Gerrit Cole on the mound, they let him go. No questions asked. And there, I guess there's no pitcher on the Yankees this year to the equivalent of Blake Snell, right? But say next year the Yankees are in the same exact situation.
Severino could be
Luis
in a spot
Severino.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah, with a pitch count. Luis Severino with a pitch count, and it's like, well, my eyes are telling me he's prime Severino, 2018 first half Severino, but the numbers might tell me he's not.
Right.
What am I gonna do?
Right. Yeah, you read that situation is what you do. You talk to your catcher and you ask him how his hand feels. You ask him how the movement is.
But do you know what Aaron Boone's gonna do?
He's gonna hopefully buck this system.
Do you want him? Do you want Aaron Boone making that decision though?
No, I want someone qualified on that bench to be talking to him and help him make that decision is what I want. That's what I want. I do believe that Aaron Boone has the ability to look on the field and see something that is baseball related though. The guy has been around enough baseball in his entire life and been ingrained in the game, you know, in his mind from his family, his dad. He knows what baseball looks like. He knows what good baseball looks like. He knows when guys are going well.
Hold on. Grown men throwing shorts, playing catch. That must be baseball over there.
It's almost like the nerds have like given him the doubt, right? And now he's like, I don't know. Now I don't know. I don't know where to go because these
nerds.
Do
you know what it's? It's like Aaron Boone went into a job interview that he knew he wasn't qualified for. So in order to get the job, he just lied on his resume and just said he was a yes man in the interview. It was like, yep, I'm going to follow the book. I'm going to follow the analytics. Yep, whatever you tell me, Brian Cashman, I'm going to do. And now he's in a situation where he's like, oh crap, I actually got the job. I didn't think I was going to get it, but now I have to do what they told me to do because that's the only reason I'm here. So I'm just stuck doing this. And then he gets outed in certain moves in certain situations where he has not made the right one. He's like 0-for-5 in big spots making moves in the playoffs, like trying to stretch CC Sabathia a few extra outs against the Red Sox. Terrible decision. Trying to the whole opener situation with Devi Garcia and
he
Jay
made
Happ
the right move
year.
With James Paxton in 2000, against last Houston. Year in 2019 when we were at that
game.
You
know, but that's an easy move because they had a three-run lead. It's not like it was exactly a...
Weren't there two runners on and that ball was hit to the track?
Did he make the right move?
I mean, the guy was out. Whoever hit that ball was out. My stomach went to my nuts. My nuts went to my toes. I was like, that ball is gone. As soon as it hit the bat, I thought the ball was gone. Yeah, scared the living piss out of me. But yes, he did eventually... At the end of the day, made the right move. Left Paxton in. It was a jolt. It was a jolt to the stadium, to James Paxton. It was an awesome moment.
Yeah.
Do you think Tony La Russa is, bucking that trend?
I don't think Tony La Russa knows what's what anymore. He's 76 years old. Do you know he managed the White Sox in 1979? So he's managing the White Sox 4 decades later. What the hell is going on with the White Sox? Aren't they a young team trying to improve, aren't they on the rise? And they're hiring one of the most ancient men in baseball.
Are they seeing this as like a baseball mind and we got to bring in an old baseball mind in here to shape the talent? I don't know. I don't know what the motivation is.
So they're a team that likes to, they have a lot of young, exciting players on that team. They have a lot of African-American players.
Yeah.
And Tony La Russa said he does not agree with kneeling.
Yeah, he's also like, he's come out and said a lot of things in the public about the kneeling. He's come out and talked about the in-game antics. I mean, Tim Anderson was like the bat flip heard around the world a couple of years ago and has as much fun as anybody on the field. And I love watching him play because he's an exciting player and he's a damn good player. And he's come out publicly and talked against him while in the media too. Very, very, very strange move. I don't. I know what you're about to say, and this is what drives me crazy. Everybody's killing them because they keep saying that AJ Hinch wanted the job. I'm like,
they tweeted out a signature of his as a congratulations.
Oh, I didn't see that of AJ Hinch.
So on the first tweet,
I did see that. Yes, yes, yes.
It was congratulations, Tony La Russa, right. and it was an AJ Hinch signature. So they were obviously close to signing him.
I don't understand the outrage, though. However, that AJ Hinch is the guy that got screwed here. Like, if you have a guy like AJ Hinch, I can't believe you go and do anything else. AJ Hinch got busted in the biggest freaking cheating scandal in the entire world, and now he's like a coveted guy that you made a huge mistake by not signing him. Like, that's what he's become.
He agreed to the Detroit job before the White Sox announced La Russa.
So clearly they didn't get the memo. The graphic guy didn't change it out.
The social media intern didn't swap out the scheduled tweet.
Yeah. Brutal. Brutal.
No. So it's my understanding, though, that Hinch was obviously interviewing for the White Sox and the Tigers job, and he took the Tigers job.
Right.
So then the White Sox had to go to their second option,
which was Tony La Russa. Also, or they're like, who else is out there?
Like, who else is in your phone right now that you can get a hold of? Tony La Russa. Okay. So, but if you're AJ Hinch, why are you taking the Detroit job? Aren't the White Sox a much closer team?
Yeah, I'd say for sure. The talent is at the major league level. They have
their playoff
significant
team.
Talent at the major league level right now. I don't know. Maybe he likes to. He thinks he needs to pay for what
start
he's
at the
done.
Bottom.
He needs to pay for what he's
it's
done.
He's a masochist. He needs to. It's a little self punishment.
He needs to make sure that that his story is written in his terms. That he brought up a team, not overtook a team that has a ton of talent.
So, AJ Hinch getting a job a year to the day after he last managed the World Series. Doesn't that just prove Alex Cora is coming back to the Red Sox?
Yeah, they've already been in talks with him, I think, right? There's already been discussions back and forth. I mean, it's crazy when you think about this. I think JJ tweeted this out. Like, think about the punishment for Hinch. Gets fired offseason, misses the COVID season, comes back, doesn't have to do any of that bullshit, comes in and is one of the most pursued guys for two jobs with very young talents. Like, you could say that Detroit's definitely on the rise. They have a lot of young talent in that system. You could argue that that's a good job if you want to, build a system, build a culture. It's exactly, AJ Hinch is the guy that you want building your culture too with a young team. I don't see how he's not qualified for building culture at all. Great opportunity.
It does, but.
He got a good deal.
Put yourself in the shoes of an owner, though, okay? What did the Astros really lose?
At the Astros themselves, like punishment-wise?
Yeah.
Nothing.
So what are you worried about hiring AJ Hinch?
No,
he might cheat and win some games and win us a World Series?
About this from the outside. Like, of course, like the guy that should not be in this position, should not be pursued as he's pursued, should not be building a culture of a young team because he is, was at the helm, apparently asleep, if you ask him, didn't know anything about it. Okay, so why are you being
worse, he knew something about it. He disagreed with it, but he didn't act.
It's just... I don't understand it from an outside looking in. This man was part of the worst cheating scandal in modern history and just immediately gets a job back with a up and coming young team in the same division.
Different
division. They moved. I forgot.
No, but.
But crazy. Crazy how fast.
Because cheating in sports is not a big deal.
I thought for sure
cheating in baseball is not a big deal. I think they've proven that.
That's true. I thought for sure when we talked about this, I was like, yeah, I think we both agreed. AJ Hinch will be back. I thought for sure it was going to be like, a buddy system. He was going to go take over like a college job in the beginning.
I thought he'd get like a third base coaching job or
a job on someone else's staff. Yeah. I did not think that he would go back to the manager spot immediately.
No, I thought he would need to do a couple years on a third base coaching job, and then someone would give him a chance in like 2024. I did not think he would get a job managing a team a year to the day after he last managed. If you're baseball, you obviously don't care. So let me just say that. You don't care about cheating, so they're fine with this. But if you do care about cheating, you have to make these guys unhirable. You have to give them a punishment where no team wants to come near them because they're unhirable. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the answer to that would be. But 1 year suspension, not even a year of baseball season, just a calendar year suspension, does not make a guy unhirable or undesirable.
No. I mean, the punishment alone does not, for sure. You'd think that the act of the transgression would be the reason he'd be unhirable, but that's not the case.
So do you think if Cora does come back to the Red Sox, do you think that's even worse than the Cora than the Hinch situation? Because he didn't even get fired. He stepped down from the Red Sox.
And no, they basically, I don't think it's
must
worse,
have had a handshake agreement. Like, yeah, go away for a year and you'll be back.
I don't think they wanted to get rid of him in the first place. So
no, they didn't. They had to, though.
Right. Like, so no, I don't think it's worse. I think it's probably not that unexpected, to be honest. Nobody thought that was that the way that it went down was had any ill will or ill feelings internally. It was like it was all just a PR thing. And now
is Beltran going to get another job?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He is. He definitely is.
Why wouldn't the White Sox hire him? Like, that's a much more that would make much more sense for a young team.
Tony La Russa.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe that's like saying that Aaron Boone is the right job, the right man for the job with zero experience.
No, but
what's the difference here?
Did Carlos Beltran hit a big postseason home run for the White Sox? I can't remember.
Not the White Sox, no. He did for Houston, the Mets. Houston, so, first time around.
So just a wild week. Like, yeah, the Dodgers won their first World Series in 30 years. Like, congratulations to the Dodgers. It's COVID-shortened season, whatever. It's a championship. But the stories has been Justin Turner, COVID, coming back on the field, and AJ Hinch getting a job immediately. Like, those are the stories in Major League Baseball. And those aren't positive stories.
Yeah. Dodgers won. That landed for, I don't know, how long did it take for Justin Turner to reappear on the field. On
45 the field. Minutes?
Not even, I don't think. I saw it. I was like, what is he? Wait, he's back on the field? I was
He quarantined. He did quarantine for like
20 minutes.
A bottom of an inning.
I tweeted out for the, you know, the green mile where he just like opens his mouth and the disease comes flying out of your mouth. Flies. That's what I think he did. He just exercised the COVID.
Demons.
Got rid of it. Oh, just gets rid of it and then comes back out. I'm good. A lot of Yankees things happen, though.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. And I've used this before to hire. Let me tell you, $75, you're probably going to get your candidate. You're going to get a ton of candidates with that amount of credit. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
The wait is finally over, guys. Football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every single possible chance to win the season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert.
Yes, a lot of Yankees things did happen. They picked up Britton's 2-year option. That was a no-brainer. We knew that was going to happen. And ironically, neither of us even had it in our GM plans. I think we just assumed it was in our GM plans.
I think we talked about it, didn't we? Mentioned it. Yeah, it was both.
Someone tweeted us saying that you guys never talked about Britton.
Yeah, our bad. We definitely just both like assumed it was happening, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, it's such a good deal for the Yankees.
We talked about it before that, yeah. that it was going to happen.
They declined Brett Gardner's $10 million option, and that means they have to pay him a $2.5 million buyout. But this does not mean he's not coming back, because they could give him like a $3 million one-year deal, so really he's getting
$5.5 million. That's what's happening. You know that's happening. Yeah.
And that means, obviously, that my Michael Brantley free agent contract is not happening. But do you think...
My Adam Eaton contract is still in play.
We talked about, though, Brett Gardner, even though he should just be the fourth outfielder, because he's Brett Gardner, he's going to take significant playing time from Clint Frazier. And I don't know if that's the right thing. If you're taking playing time from Clint Frazier, from Michael Brantley, A-okay with that. I'm not okay with Brett Gardner taking playing time from Clint Frazier anymore.
No, Clint Frazier needs to be the starting left fielder. Bottom line, that's it. He needs to be given that ability to work into the job. And I don't want to see Clint Frazier after an 0 for 10 get yanked for Brett Gardner, and then Brett Gardner goes on a little streak, and now Frazier hasn't played in a week. I don't want that scenario to play out. They need to commit to him and let him work through anything if it were to be. I think he's earned that opportunity. I really do. I think, and also, there's so much more upside with a guy like him that the Yankees long-term should want to do that. So I don't know what they're going to do here. If they do sign Brett Gardner, again, I love Brett Gardner. He's fine. Shouldn't be on this team anymore, though. It's done. Like, they need to anoint Frazier, man, and they just need to move forward. Again, psychologically, it's just a thing. Like, with him around, it's not his job. It's not Frazier's job.
Yeah, because Brett Gardner's been there for 11 years. He's been the starting left fielder for 11 years.
It is a big deal as a baseball player playing every single day, knowing that you're coming into the ballpark. You don't have to like worry about where you are in the lineup and all these things. Like, you're going out there, you're going to be batting probably like six, you know, around that 6-7 spot, and you're playing left field every day. Put it in there. That's what's happening. Unless I'm getting a scheduled off day, if I'm not feeling great, whatever it is, but that's happening. And that's a big deal for as a baseball player, I think. I think it's a different mentality to not know and to be playing that utility role. And I don't think Frazier's great for that spot. I think that Frazier will benefit the most from a development standpoint and just pure producing from being on the lineup card every day, being our left fielder. I think that is where the biggest positive will impact the Yankees.
He did show he could play left and right field this year, though.
Yeah, he showed he could do it, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be consistent. He's showed you he's got the ability.
There's going to be injuries next year in the outfield. Like, that's just the thing that they're going to have to deal with. Aaron Judge isn't going to play 150 games. Hicks isn't playing 150 games. So in theory, there could be enough playing time for both of them. But it's really just like, can't you find an equal or better option than Brett Gardner at this point?
Adam Eaton.
Yeah, Adam Eaton.
Adam Eaton's coming off of, I mean, he did not have a good year, but he's a good ball player. He had a down year, but look at his numbers before.
They traded Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, they did. And I was looking at that when they first did. I'm like, what are you doing? Then Giolito sucked for a year.
Yeah, Giolito kind of fell off the prospect map. Remember, he was the number one prospect.
He was the number one prospect in baseball.
Yeah, yeah. But then he kind of dipped. He had a bad minor league season and they gave up on him.
Yes.
Imagine if they had Giolito, Scherzer,
crazy,
Strasburg, and Corbin.
Nuts. They probably wouldn't have signed Corbin if Giolito showed what he was.
True.
But yes, you look at that deal and it's crazy, the deal that went down. That being said, Adam Eaton, not that far away from being a very good player. I still think that's a good addition.
Yeah, he's a lefty bat. And I know we talked about last episode, he does strike out a lot, but I could see him fitting into this roster pretty easily.
Defensively, it's a great fit. And yeah, a little motivation, a little bit of a spark plug. Guy who's just won a title recently. I'm good with that.
I know we were all surprised that they didn't pick up J-Hap's $17 million option.
Yeah, it's sad.
Kind of surprising, Tommy Canley elected free agency. Because in lieu of an outright assignment to AAA, obviously they don't want to pay him for rehabbing. But I thought they might have a situation, and I even thought about putting this in my GM plans. Sign him to like a 2-year, $3 million
deal. Nathan Eovaldi deal?
Yeah, so you're basically paying him $3 million to pitch in 2022. But you're just giving him a 2-year contract because he could be a great bullpen option for you in 2022 after Tommy John. But I don't know, maybe they just figure bullpen options are a dime a dozen.
I mean, I understand this move. It does make sense, and the Yankees have shown to do this in the past. The fact that he's going to be out next year, I think, made it pretty easy. And they're giving him options. I mean, they could still re-sign him. Doesn't mean they can't re-sign him.
This completes I think it completes the David Robertson, Tommy Kane League, Todd Frazier for Blake Rutherford deal.
Wasn't there one more guy involved? Was that it? I thought there was another minor leaguer.
One more guy going to the White Sox or?
No, coming over. Canely.
No, it was Canely, D-Rob, and Frazier.
Right. And Rutherford, yeah. Man, Rutherford, I haven't heard much about him, to be honest.
I haven't heard anything about him. I have no clue what's going on. I guess he's still young, right? He was like 21 when they traded him.
He was very young, yeah. And he was in low A ball, I think, at that point. He wasn't having a good year, but.
What do you put the odds at LeMahieu picking that qualifying offer up?
I don't think he's going to pick it up. I think that LeMahieu would even be more motivated to just sign a longer-term deal just based on his age. I can't imagine him just going after a one-year contract right now.
$19 million is basically where we put his AAV at, so that makes sense. But yeah, and you might get him for 3 years instead of 4 years. And so that would be great from the Yankee standpoint.
The gamble for LeMahieu is sign this deal, roll the dice to see what happens next year with this CBA, or sign what may have been a 5-year deal, but now I could only sign 3 years. AAV probably doesn't change that much, if at all. But now you're going to be going in for another contract in 3 years, which you could bet on yourself. Theoretically, that's a good thing. And maybe you could extend that for another 2 to 3 year deal. Very possible. Turn a 5-year deal into a 6-year deal on 2 contracts. It's possible.
Okay, put yourself in the DJ LeMahieu shoes right now.
Yeah.
You have 2 options. $18.9 million 1 year qualifying offer or a 3-year $50 million deal.
3-year $50 million. I'm trying to do math in my head here. I'm probably taking the 3-year $50.
That's $16.6 million.
Yeah. 1 year. I don't like walking into this. There is a lot of just shit that's coming out for the next year and the CBA. I don't like walking into that without a contract.
So you're taking $350 million?
It's more for 50? It's riskier to take the year deal and for only what?
$3 million less AAV.
But you're thinking about that as also the fact that if there is a CBA, everything's good, you're probably getting a 5-year deal. Whereas now you're getting a 3-year deal. You're betting on yourself that after that 3-year deal, you're still attractive enough to get another 2 to 3 year deal.
So maybe 3 years is too sweet. What about it? If you only
2 years, I think makes it very difficult.
Two years, $36 million. It's $18 million a year.
Oh yeah. No. Let me back up. I actually think that's a better deal for LeMahieu. Because I think 2 years, now that you're giving the CBA a year to breathe and you're not that old.
Oh, I see. And you're not going to be that old.
Yeah, so you could definitely sign a 3 to 4 year
deal. If you're a team, you're just trying to lock him in for like 4 years on the cheap or definitely 3 years on the cheap.
Right. Yeah, you want to go higher. Making it more difficult is if you go higher. Right.
Yeah.
Higher in years.
It's
all about being able to position yourself for another contract if you take a shorter one.
Right. And 2 years positions yourself great, maybe even better than a 1-year deal.
Probably, knowing what the landscape is.
Yeah. I didn't think about it that way. An interesting name that's now a free agent is Chris Archer, because the Pirates did not pick up his $11 million option.
I mean, is he interesting?
He's an interesting name because he was good when he was on the Rays pitching against the Yankees, but he sucked when he's been with Pittsburgh. He's actually been a below league average pitcher, 4.92 ERA, 4.71 FIP in 172 innings since they acquired him. They gave up Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows, those stupid morons.
What a bunch of idiots. We should apply to jobs.
What an idiot.
We could legitimately go to Pittsburgh.
Didn't everyone say when that trade happened, like, dumb trade Pittsburgh? Like, immediately people were like, dumb trade Pittsburgh?
Yeah, dumb trade. Very dumb trade. And they have brought up some pitchers in that system too. They just can't capitalize on them.
So is that an interesting option though for the Yankees on a 1-year flyer deal with some incentives?
No.
No?
What are the incentives? Incentives do nothing if you can't pitch well. It's not like he's deciding not to pitch well.
But he was injured. He missed all of 2020. He was injured.
So you're thinking that potentially we're looking at a 2019 where he just was a down year and then
down. Yeah, he's taken a full year off, recovered from some injuries.
How old is he?
Maybe I want to say 32, 31.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. It's a name. It doesn't really interest me that much, to be honest. I'd rather pay for something that's better and a known quantity.
Would you rather have Kevin Gausman?
No, I want neither one of them. I don't
as a fifth starter.
I don't want any of these guys that are just going to be painstaking for us to talk about for another freaking year plus.
Okay, but you have to understand that Trevor Bauer is not likely to sign with the Yankees.
I actually think all this craziness makes it more likely.
Can you just play out the scenario with me? If Trevor Bauer is not a Yankee, like, is Chris Archer? If the Yankees go into next season with Chris Archer as a number five starter, plus Devi Garcia and Clark Schmidt and other guys competing for the rotation, is that really that bad of a spot?
I have to look deeper into Chris Archer and why he struggled. You know, if it's based on the injury and that's just not going to be the same guy, then no, I want nothing to do with him. If the powers that be believe that the injury has been holding him back and that was why some of these numbers were down, then okay, fine. Take a gamble and if we're thinking that health was the reason and we believe that he's fully healthy and that, you know, there's an up left, there's a little curve up on this path, then fine. It's not a bad flyer. But
yeah,
it feels like the injury is a problem. And he's just like he hit a ceiling and now we're no longer there.
So
he's gonna wear his hat really high in his head too, which used to annoy the shit out of me.
Well, that's because he had a ton of hair and he would have to cut the hair.
What if it's under the hat? It's not below your shoulders.
That's a good question. No one's ever done that, have they?
Not that we know of. Maybe it's been hidden in the hat.
No, but I think it's also like a general it's an appearance policy. Like, I did a history episode about this.
But you, so then you should know. You should know. What the rules are.
It's not just about going on the field, it's about conducting yourself off the field.
What if it's just up? What if it's a man bun for a year?
He would be the first Yankees pitcher with a man bun.
What if he doesn't take off his hat? Or a hat.
You still have a man bun. If a tree falls in the woods, no one would ever hear it. The tree still fell.
Unless that hat is see-through.
If Chris Archer has a man bun and no one ever takes the hat off, does he still have a man bun? Yes.
I don't know. If the hat is not see-through, I don't know. It's a fitted hat. There's no window in the back. I don't know what's under there.
The window in the back. Is that what they call that on the hats now?
Yeah, snapback. There's a window back there. You can see things.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be very interesting over the next 10 days to see what some of these guys do in free agency and the qualifying offer. Any other interesting names that you...
Ryan Braun was one, I think, that got declined, right? There's names out there. There are definitely opportunities to get some players here if a team or multiple teams wanted to bolster their roster a little bit more, if they wanted to spend some money and be a little bit more free with the way that they were spending cash right now. I think there is an opportunity. You know who this is perfect for?
I was gonna say Tampa.
Nope.
Who?
The newly owned New York Mets, baby.
Oh.
Cohen is gonna go in and get some names.
We knew Cohen's gonna spend money.
Yeah,
anyway.
But this is the great. This is like perfect for him. He go out there, get a bunch of names, probably cheaper, but just like get a bunch of names, bring them all into the Mets. Everybody's gonna be excited because of the baseball cards. And they're all going to suck together. They're going to be old and not that good. And I could see them going out there. And
that
just,
would be so typical. Mets,
yeah, it's perfect.
Like,
no, it's
sign
really.
Sign Michael Brantley.
I actually just got really excited.
Sign Chris Archer. Sign Kevin Gausman.
And Ryan
like,
Braun,
no,
definitely
going to
be a Met.
Sense.
Definitely going to be a Met. This is
What if Cohen just gives $280 million to Trevor Bauer?
I mean, I could see him doing that too.
Like Cohen, I could see Cohen and Bauer getting along.
Maybe. I don't know Cohen's like personality. I know he's got. Does he walk in as the richest owner in baseball? He's up there if he's not there, and he's talked about being his wallet opening up.
Like after you're a billionaire, do you really like care?
I think he's like obnoxiously obscenely wealthy.
Rich?
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they all are.
This guy, I have a feeling he's going to spend some money. It's just going to matter of if they have baseball guys, which route they're going to go in how they spend this money.
It'll be wrong, whatever route they do go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to the spectacular fall.
Dellin Betances just said he's not leaving the Mets, right?
If you're Betances, why are you leaving New York at this point?
Oh, no, he's made it very clear that he loves New York, wants to stay in New York. Guy's from New York. So does make sense, I guess. But I know a lot of people were thinking that he was going to rehab with the Mets and come back to the Yankees.
Yeah. Couple other items I wanted to touch on before we close out. So Herman Sanchez and Andujar are going to be playing winter ball. This is the first time Sanchez is playing winter ball. What was it? In like 8 years or something? Or 7 years? Something
when he was
like crazy?
13 years old.
He's been 13 for a while. What do you read into that?
Sure. Good. I'm glad. I think that when you have a down year, I want you to play more baseball.
And this year they're like, oh, well, you didn't get the same amount of plate appearances because of COVID. So this is a reps thing. It's not a...
I would much rather you go back to Dominican Republic, which you're going to do anyway, and play baseball in a competitive way and get better, stay in shape, baseball shape, and come in ready to roll, best shape of your life.
But, well, you know what this means, right? We're going to see highlights of Gary Sanchez hitting like 500-foot home runs in the winter league, and everyone's going to be like, oh, Gary's back, because he's going to be annihilating feasting. Crappy pitching.
Yeah.
And he's going to hit like 400 with 7 home runs because
Andujar.
Yeah, because he's facing bad competition.
Yeah.
Not bad competition, but...
Not to...
Inferior competition to Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, he's going to be sitting...
That's what's going to happen.
Gary Sanchez is going to be sitting fastball every single pitch.
And guess what? He's going to crush them.
He's going to get some really bad fastballs over the middle of the plate and he's going to demolish them.
Do you remember the Grand Slam against the Mets?
Of course I do.
It's going to be that. Multiple times. Fastball, batting practice, fastball, 94 mile an hour fastball, down the dick. Here comes Gary Sanchez launching.
I mean, look, maybe it gives him the confidence to be back. Maybe that's a thing. Maybe
did the Mets home run give him confidence? No.
I mean, he's going to hit multiple of these. He could set a record for
a winter league home run.
You don't see guys like him in the quote prime of their career going down to the Dominican Republic playing winter.
No. That's why these pitchers, they're as bad as Gary Sanchez has been, he's still more talented than 99% of the guys he's going to be facing.
Yeah, so you will see some numbers. Theoretically, you should see some numbers from him. Greg Bird did not show numbers when he went down.
Well, Greg Bird's an exception. He's permanently broken. After the 6,000 to 8,000 more plate appearances that never happened, Greg Bird is just broken forever.
Yeah, that's sad.
So a story that we didn't mention, it's from back in September. It was an article in The Athletic. It was
We did mention this. We did mention this. It wasn't a long thing, but we mentioned it. I remember talking about it.
Okay. Well, it was Andujar's agent basically complaining about how the Yankees handled him this year and saying that they're manipulating his service time.
Yeah.
And maybe we did mention it, but...
We definitely did.
Yeah, I think what we concluded is like, well, dude, you can't play defense anywhere. They gave you a couple chances in left field and you looked like a little leaguer out there. And unfortunately, you didn't hit in the sporadic playing time, but like that's the situation.
There was a moment where he started hitting, but here's the answer to it. Yeah, that's exactly what they did. they're absolutely messing with your service time. Yes.
But if he played better, they wouldn't have done that.
Probably not. You're right. It was a risk like, for that sense. If that is deemed as a risk, the service time, losing that for getting unknown quantities up in the major leagues, then yeah, they went that way.
I know Andujar was in your trade plans because and that makes sense because like realistically, what is he next year? How does he help the Yankees next year?
No, I think this is the year this is the time that you have to get rid of him because I think he's still young enough where he can show a return for whoever gets him. He still has a bat. Like you would give him some consistent at bats. The guy rips.
Maybe they just show his winter ball highlights.
Well, we saw it last year at spring training, if you remember, like he was looking jacked. He was smooth from third base, like looking great.
He was catching fly balls in left field. Yeah. And then,
but at the end of the day, the bat is what's going to get him traded and why people are going to be wanting him on their team. And most likely it'll be an American League team. so that they have...
Well, I don't know, because there's a lot of indication that the DH is going to be universal.
That's true.
After the next CBA. So if you're a National League team, you could bank on a universal DH in 2019.
That's even better for the Yankees then, if that is the case.
Yeah, it's 29 teams.
And general managers are making that determination and identifying that as a known quantity, then that's great for the Yankees.
But so,
they don't
so
have anywhere to play him. There's nowhere for
him. No, exactly. My point is, what is the benefit to holding on to him and having him be on your roster next year? Because then you're basically banking on him hitting in the five at-bats he gets a week. And it's like, well, that's not going to happen. That's not fair to him. That's not fair to anything.
I mean, he could be in the minor leagues.
Do you think his value... How much do you think his value increases if he plays in the minor leagues? If there is a minor league season, is there going to be season next year?
That's very, very, very much up in the air. I mean, don't even look at the COVID stuff. Just look at the dollars. Like, you want to talk about an industry that got destroyed. Minor league baseball.
Minor league baseball.
Just annihilated.
Tanked. But if there is a minor league season next year and he hits
yes,
in the minor
because I
leagues,
think that you're showing
if he hits Triple A pitching, what does that do for a team? They're like, we know he can hit Triple A pitching.
Well, no, it's also him going out there and playing baseball and hitting. So I think this is part of why he's playing in the Dominican Republic as well. He's got to show again that he's out there consistently hitting a ball, no matter the competition. I'm healthy. I'm hitting the ball. My fundamentals are good. Like, they're not just going to look at the results of it. They're going to be looking at all of the things as him as a player. So I think it's a positive thing for him to be playing. And I think it helps the Yankees too.
Last thing, question. Is Jason Dominguez getting too jacked? Is he too swole? Because he's put on, I'm looking at a picture of him right now.
He looks like the Incredible Hulk.
He's put on like 60 pounds of muscle in the last year.
He's massive.
And I know he's like literally going through growth spurts because they signed him when he was 16.
So is this like a, maybe this is a strategy when you're a young
guy
like
this. Look at his calf muscles. Maybe if his calf muscles are like an ordinary person's thigh.
I mean, Bo Jackson was a specimen. The guy was jacked. I don't know if it was for, picking up bales of hay and like slinging sledgehammers like on a farm, or if he actually lifted weights as
just,
well.
Some people are just like, unnaturally just
he's huge
jacked.
But the other thing about Jason Dominguez, I'm wondering if there's a strategy here where you get big, then you lean into it. And I don't mean lean into it like you embrace it. I mean, you start going lean, you cut down the body fat, and now you're just all muscle, you're just a specimen.
Yeah, but has that worked out for Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge?
But they're very, very different in structure, their body, the frame.
Yeah, I know, but you don't need to be the most jacked guy on the baseball field to be the best guy on the baseball field.
Agreed. So it depends on how he can manage it.
And I get he's literally going through these growth spurts. Like he was a 16-year-old child.
Yes.
Like they signed him as a child.
Correct.
And now he's going to 17, 18. Like you're still growing.
I probably would not call him a child to his face though.
No, but you know what I'm saying. It's like he's probably eating like 7,000 calories.
Oh yeah, he's packing the calories.
He's like a lot constantly of protein. Eating. He's having just whey protein shits like you've never seen before, and he's mashing baseballs to the sun.
Absolutely, I'm excited for him. I think he's going to be here in 2 years.
Is he the number one prospect in baseball yet? I don't think so, right? He's
technically he's probably no, but in everybody's mind, he is that guy.
Yeah. Oh man, his poor toilet.
It's gonna be so much fun. Let's get him up here. That'll be fun.
2020.
2 years. Year's 2021.
So he'll be 19. So he's gonna be the next Juan Soto.
Yeah, I think he's gonna fly. I think he's gonna fly through the system.
Do you think the Yankees will do that though?
Yes. Well, it depends if they've won a World Series or not.
All right, I was just gonna say, if they've won a World Series, do you think they'll do that?
They'll be slower then.
Slower.
But I think they also look at that as rocket fuel.
If in 2023, right, Aaron Hicks is like, oh, my back hurts, I got to go on the IL in
Jason
August.
Jason Dominguez time, baby.
And the Yankees have not won a championship yet? Yeah, Jason Dominguez time. Although he's bulking himself into a corner outfield spot.
He could still fly. I mean, Mike Trout's no skinny dude, man. He's pretty freaking stout himself.
Mike Trout is an alien.
As is Dominguez. Dominguez.
No, he's a Martian.
Is a Martian.
That's going to do it for this episode. Submit some mailbag questions. We're gonna probably be back every week, every Monday. We're recording this Monday afternoon right now. But anything else you want to say?
No, I'm excited to see how these things play out. So we'll
have some answers maybe on the qualifying offers by next week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's gonna be an interesting offseason for sure.
Merritt, we'll talk to you guys in a week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.